Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith and hope with Stephen O'Doherty.
As we've discussed many times on this program, gambling is a shocking problem in Australia. Shocking problem. The usual response to assisting problem gamblers, indeed the government's strategy, is based on having compulsory messages like gamble responsibly. But new research from ANU suggests the gamble responsibly messaging approach may indeed be ineffective. That research was conducted by Dr. Marissa Fogarty. She's the director of the Centre of Gambling Research at the ANU. Marissa, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
What were the questions that you asked these 50 people that you interviewed?
So we wanted to find out how we could better assist people who were experiencing harm from gambling. So what we did was we asked people what services they were currently using, what they thought would help assist in reducing the harm from gambling in their lives, and who were the best people to assist them in reducing harm from gambling.
Now, before we get to the results themselves, I'm very interested in how you recruited those people, because to be really useful, of course, your research would need to be pretty representative of a wide range of people with problem gambling. So how did you recruit?
So most states and territories in Australia have a gambling prevalence survey, which is a population-level survey that aims to understand the level of harm in community. And so what we did, we used the ACT Gambling Health and Wellbeing Survey, and we targeted those people who had registered as experiencing harm from gambling. So those people, when they completed the first survey, said whether they would be happy to be recontacted or not for future research. And those that were happy to participate, we called them up and arranged a time to have an interview, and it was about an hour-long interview, so we're very grateful for people's participation in the study.
So you've got people who self-identify as having a gambling problem.
Just to clarify, it's actually not people who self-identified as having a problem. We gave everyone in the prevalence survey and in the population a gambling screen. It's called the Problem Gambling Severity Index. So those people, and through that index, we can see people who are experiencing harm from gambling, but that doesn't mean that they necessarily identify themselves as having a
problem.
Oh, that's
really important. So just to go over that, you basically are looking at people who are regular gamblers, or even maybe occasional gamblers, whatever, but some of them may or may not think that they've got harm.
That's exactly right.
Ah,
and this is something that's really come out of this work, is that the language that we use, so people, the sort of terminology of problem gamblers or gambling addiction, those kind of things, it's not actually very helpful terminology. So what we're really trying to do now is look at gambling harm. And this may be a sort of one-off incident where someone's gone into a venue, they've lost their money on the pokies, and for that month they haven't been able to pay their bills. They might not necessarily see themselves as having a gambling problem, but what they are experiencing is harm from gambling. So we sort of want to shift the conversation to that broader level.
Yep, and I think that is a very, very important aspect, because a lot of programs that are aimed at helping people with who experience harm from gambling really require the person to acknowledge that they have harm in the first place. In fact, most of the government-sponsored or government-mandated warnings about, you know, gamble responsibly and so on, you would think that a large percentage of the population is going to go, well, of course I gamble responsibly. That's not a message for me.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that messaging is pretty much, it's quite stigmatising. It's also quite meaningless to most people. And so what we want to do, and what we aim to do with this report, is to try and, at a community level, we can sort of target and change our messaging and the language that we're using to be more appropriate.
So is one of the key findings of your research that the limited controls we have over the amount of gambling in this country, particularly through poker machines and so on, is the limited amount of control we have over that via health warnings, is that ineffective in your view?
It could be more effective,
right,
how about we put it that way.
Yes.
So we can definitely, we can target different population groups, we can change our messaging to actually be relevant to people, and this is what was really great about this work is we were talking to gamblers. So we're talking to the people who are impacted by gambling, and so understanding what and the other thing that really came out is the strategies that people use to control their gambling themselves.
What sorts of things, Marissa?
So people would often limit the amount of cash they would take to a venue. They might leave their ATM card at home. Often people said that going with a family member or friend or a partner was quite a protective mechanism where they wouldn't gamble as much and would be more in control of their gambling if they went with someone else. Also taking breaks during their play was a big thing that came up. These were ways that a lot of people used to manage their gambling and minimise harm while they're in a venue.
So I guess you'd say that those are all good things in themselves, but at some level there's an acknowledgement there that without putting in place physical barriers or emotional barriers, taking a family member with you, then gambling will get to the point where it's so much in control of what you're doing that you don't realise the harm that it's making. I mean, if you're if you say, I'll only take $500 to the club because I know that I won't be able to stop myself spending more than that, isn't that a sign that there's real harm being done?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And this is where I think people are recognising that it is potentially a problem for themselves. But this is where often people don't seek help for gambling problems until they've had a massive relationship breakdown or until they've sort of lost the mortgage through the machines. The sort of real hard end impacts seem to be when most people will go and seek help through formal services. But what we really need to do is say, well, actually, there's a lot of other people in the population that experience harm that do need help and support, but who won't necessarily seek it because they don't necessarily think they have a problem.
Our guest is Dr. Marissa Fogarty. She is the Director of the Centre for Gambling Research at the ANU School of Social Science. Well, take us, Marissa, into the mind of one of those gamblers. In your survey, what are they saying to you that they would say to themselves about their gambling?
I think a lot of people really say, well, that was a one-off incident, or that happened, but I won't do that again. That, you know, in terms of negative impacts. And but I think the thing that comes through strongly is that people are being harmed by gambling, and the harms are not just experienced by themselves; they're experienced by their families. And so, really, it's not just an individual problem; it's a broader community problem, and we need to be addressing it as such.
Well, some of the strategies that you've started to talk about coming out of this research include the use of family members. I can imagine, though, that's not always easy. It can't be easy to be a family member. In fact, there's a well-known case at the moment playing out in the pages of the Sydney Morning Herald, as I recall it, about a family that was desperate to get help for a person who later took their own life as a result of gambling problems. So it can't be easy.
No, absolutely not. And I think this is the thing, that there are support services out there for family members as well. So any of the gambling help online, the gambling hotline numbers, the gambling counselling services, family members can go and see them. And it's not just for the people who are experiencing the problem as such. Really encourage family members to approach services, because they do have strategies and they can offer ways to family members to then bring up the issue with their loved one about their gambling issues. And so, I strongly encourage family members to seek help as much as those experiencing gambling harms themselves.
What else did your research tell you is a way of getting people over the hump from not realising they have a problem, through shame if they do realise they have a problem, through to finding effective assistance?
I think what one of the other things that came through was that people access GPs, for example, very regularly.
Right.
And they do actually access a range of services in our community.
Yes.
So how do we integrate gambling into those models of service delivery? So if you're going to a GP perhaps getting GPs to start saying, well, you know, are you gambling? Is this a problem for you or becoming an issue for you? And, you know, why aren't you sleeping at night? And where are you going? Like that kind of thing. Are you going to a venue and are you gambling? And so sort of trying to broaden the reach of who talks about gambling with people. And I think that's a lot to do about training GPs and training other service providers to know how to talk with people about gambling.
Mm. So do you hope that your research will be picked up by health and other authorities to design better a better interface, I guess?
Yeah, absolutely, and just broaden the interface so that it doesn't have to be about the individual when they've reached that really hard point of harm where their life is in crisis.
Yep.
That they then have to seek help. It's about trying to change, as a community, the reach that we have to people before the problem gets so bad.
Yeah. Marissa Fogarty is with us, Director of the Centre for Gambling Research at ANU. I'd like to ask you about what you're doing at the moment. We've caught up with you in Tennant Creek, and you're working there with Aboriginal communities. What can you tell me about the work you're doing there?
Yeah, we've been working for a few years now in the Northern Territory, conducting a project looking at gambling in remote Indigenous communities. So one of the things we've found is that Aboriginal people in the Northern Territory communities experience gambling harms at much higher rates than the non-Indigenous community. And so we've been working with local people, communities and services to try and address these harms in culturally appropriate ways.
As soon as you say remote communities, of course, people will think, well, how do you get access to the ready access, you know, to the sorts of gambling that's available to most people, poker machines and so on? How does that work? How do you get access?
Yeah. So people have access to commercial gambling poker machines at the town centres like Darwin, Alice, Tennant Creek and Catherine.
Right.
But outside of that, people play cards in remote communities. So this is not really something that people down south know much about. But in the communities, people play cards day and night. It's a very much an activity that a large majority of the community will be participating in. There's often large amounts of money that go through these card games. And, I mean, they're very social, but also there are sort of negative impacts of the games in terms of if you're playing a game or who's looking after your children. And if you're playing all night, well, then, and your children aren't supervised, well, then they might be tired for school the next day and not go to school, not getting enough money for food, that kind of thing. So these are all the sort of impacts that we've been working with communities around.
And I guess you've got to be very careful not to do other cultural harm. So you're working cross-culturally as a white woman working in an Aboriginal community. Are you seeing mostly men or men and women?
No, it's predominantly women.
Oh, really?
That's
interesting.
Who play cards. Yeah, that's right. And even in the poker machines, on the poker machines, it would be more women, Aboriginal women, that play the pokies than men.
What's going on there?
Well, culturally, the activity is slightly different to how we engage in a non-Indigenous way, I guess. And, you know, you often go into a gaming venue here and Aboriginal people often play with, there'll be two or three people around the machine, whereas non-Indigenous people play very often, very much just one-on-one with the machine. So there's just different ways of gambling. It's culturally different. And
I get that. So then back to my original question, which is how do you deal with that in a way that brings help but in a culturally appropriate way?
Yeah, well, like I most often wouldn't talk about gambling as such. I would talk about card games, and that often takes the sort of stigma out of the discussion, because when you start talking about gambling, people get their backs up a bit that, or you're saying there's a problem and that kind of thing. So I would talk about card games and mostly about how people play. And, you know, once people start chatting, then, you know, they're more open. And once you, you know, take time to build trust in the relationship, then people are more open about how it is actually impacting them.
Yeah, interesting. And a final question that you may or may not care to answer. You know, there's a lot of talk at the moment about the government's cashless card. Does the access to cash make a difference to what you're trying to do?
Well, what we've found and what's been shown since the 10 or so years since the intervention is that people are still gambling and gambling significant amounts of money despite restrictions on their welfare. So I guess, again, we need to build the evidence base to prove it one way or another, but there does not seem to be clear evidence that restricting people's access to cash reduces the gambling harm. Mm.
Wow. Marissa, thanks once again for your time.
No worries. Thank you so much.
Dr. Marissa Fogarty, she's from ANU, and she's the director for the Centre for Gambling Research. They're one of those research centres that gathers together people from different disciplines to tackle subjects across the board, as it were. And that research that shows that other things other than just the anti-gambling messages may be more effective, especially this personal approach of being alongside someone, because that would be hard, being the family member of a person in chronic gambling addiction. Unless they're ready to have help, it's like so many of these things, it's difficult to help them. There is a gambling helpline, and the number for that is 1-800-858-858, 1-800-858-858. Some helpful resources there on the Lifeline website. Gee, they're good people, aren't they? The people
Discover more Open House podcasts at openhousecommunity.com.au.